Hello and welcome to Armchair Detectives Wanted. This is episode 24, A Few Days Holiday. This is our final episode of season 1. But don't worry, season 2 is right around the corner. It will be available from Sunday, the 4th of August 2024, so put the date in your diary. However, over the next few months, we will be hosting some live online events called Meet the Expert. Here, you will be able to listen to criminal experts and speakers sharing their personal stories, and then participate in Q&A sessions. Keep a lookout on our website for dates. For those of our listeners that are in the UK, we are hosting the British True Crime Convention in Sheffield on Saturday, the 7th of September 2024. Tickets are £40, which includes a buffet. For all our events and ticket information, go to our events page at www.armchairdetectiveswanted.com. We would like to take this opportunity to thank you for listening. If you feel we can improve the podcast or our events, then please contact us at info@armchairdetectiveswanted.com. After all, you are the listener. We really would appreciate you sharing our podcast wherever possible. Once again, thank you. Before we start, I will just issue a warning. This podcast may include content that some could find upsetting. It may also contain offensive language. As with all these cases, they are real life events. So please be aware that the crimes have had an impact on the family and friends of the victim. This is the disappearance of Tiffany Daniels on August the 12th, 2013. To put some context to the disappearance, we will provide some background to Tiffany's life and family. At the time she vanished in Pensacola, Florida, she was aged 25. She was born on March 11, 1998 in Dallas, Texas. Tiffany was employed as a theatre technician at Pensacola State College. She was the daughter of Rodney and Cindy Daniels. Tiffany was described by her family as free-spirited and would light up a room with her presence. She had lived with her family in Dallas, Texas. Tiffany had an interest in art and had a bubbly personality. She was known for her enthusiastic and outgoing personality. She enjoyed painting and acquired employment as a set painter at Pensacola State College Theatre Department. In her downtime, she would often walk, hike or cycle in the dunes of Santa Rosa Island. She enjoyed blues and swing dance parties in the local area. Tiffany had 4 tattoos on the top of her feet. These were plants growing into bloom. Although she was happy in her lifestyle, she was struggling financially. Her parents were aware that by the summer of 2013, her financial commitments were increasing. This was caused by her tenants either failing or unable to pay their rent. This meant Tiffany had to pay their portion of the rent to ensure she maintained her home. After a tenant moved out, she advertised on Craigslist for a new roommate. The person who came forward was 54-year-old Gary Nichols. He was the father of one of her friends. Gary was separating from his wife and needed accommodation closer to his employer. Although Tiffany's parents were reluctant for a man twice her age to move in, they accepted that he was able to pay his share of the rent and bills. He duly moved in. Although there was an age gap, they had similar interest. Tiffany was pescatarian, and Nichols had a similar diet. He also enjoyed biking like Tiffany. The day before Tiffany disappeared, she shared breakfast with her boyfriend. He was on his way to the University of Texas to study robotics. He had asked her to go with him. Although she was happy in the relationship, she didn't feel like she wanted to leave Pensacola yet. She was of the opinion that for the time being, they could continue their romance at a distance. Her friends confirmed that she was totally committed to her relationship. Tiffany had already made plans to visit him in Austin. After they had shared breakfast, her boyfriend set off for his new university life. Her housemate, Gary, recalls that she seemed a little depressed, but that is understandable. The theatre company Tiffany was employed by were organising a production of Spamalot. On the evening of the 11th of August, the day before she vanished, she watched Monty Python's Holy Grail with Gary. They both then made their way to their respective bedrooms. At 5 a.m. the following morning, Gary heard the front door open and close a few times. He looked out of the window but didn't see Tiffany. At about 7 a.m, Gary got out of bed and left for work. He did notice that Tiffany's car had gone. At the time she was driving a grey Toyota 4Runner. He presumed she had gone to work. When her parents were advised of this, they thought it a little strange. There wasn't any need for her to leave that early. In fact, her parents say she was always on the last minute, leaving no earlier than she had to. She arrived at work as normal and began painting sets. During the day, she asked if she could leave a little early and intimated that she may take a few days off. Tiffany didn't explain why she needed the holiday, just saying things she had to take care of. The holiday was agreed and she left work at 4:43 p.m. on August 12, 2013. The time is confirmed as it were punched on her time card. She left the theatre, never to be seen again. During that evening, her housemate Gary became concerned when she had not returned by 10 p.m. He contacted her by phone, but she did not return his calls. He called his daughter, a friend of Tiffany, who told him not to worry. She said that Tiffany was an adult and may be hanging out with friends. He agreed and decided to go to bed. The following morning, Gary again tried to contact Tiffany without success. On returning home from work later that day, he discovered the electricity had been turned off. He thought that Tiffany had failed to pay her share of the bill, and that's why the electricity had been cut off. He recontacted his daughter to advise her that Tiffany had still not returned. His daughter then decided she should contact Tiffany's parents, which she did via Facebook.
Both Cindy, Tiffany's mother, and Noel, the friend of Tiffany and daughter of Gary, began contacting all her friends. None of them had seen or heard from her. By the end of the week, they realised that she was missing and needed to be reported to the police. Initial police reaction at Escambia County was tepid, which seems to be quite common in these cases. The police appeared dismissive of the case, believing she may be with friends. Eventually, the case was referred to the Pensacola Police Department, which was the law enforcement covering the area where she lived. The investigation was given to Detective Daniel Harnett. He met with Cindy, Tiffany's mother, at Tiffany's home address. Together they made a search. Detective Harnett did not find any evidence of a crime while searching the home. They did notice that her tent was still in the room. This was a tent she used if she was hiking, walking or cycling for more than a day. Detective Harnett and Cindy formed the opinion that she definitely did not intend to go camping. Tiffany's boyfriend became a suspect, as would be expected, especially since he had only left the day before her last sighting. He had called Tiffany on the 11th from Austin, but he didn't make any contact with her on the 12th. He provided fingerprints, DNA, and his phone records. This proved that he had been in Austin at the time of her disappearance. He was ruled out, as it confirmed he had not secretly returned to Pensacola to harm her. The police considered the fact she may be depressed due to her boyfriend leaving. Her sister confirmed she had been making plans for the future. It seemed out of character that Tiffany would commit suicide or start a new life somewhere else. It does appear that Tiffany did return to her home address briefly after finishing work early. Gary would have been present at the time but was speaking to his girlfriend. He does not recall Tiffany returning. Cindy was a little sceptical of that. She believed it would have been almost impossible for Tiffany to return without Gary knowing. Gary said in his statement that he heard the front door opening and closing at 5 a.m. on the day she vanished, but when she returned early from work, he did not hear or see her, even though he was present at the address. The police believe Gary is being honest and do not suspect him of any offences. The media reported on her disappearance and publicity was generated. Flyers were distributed and placed on all local streets. the coverage began to bring forward witnesses. A jogger who was by chance a friend of Tiffany's spotted her vehicle in the parking area of Park West in Pensacola Beach near Fort Pickens. This is located at the western end of Santa Rosa Island. The vehicle was found on August the 20th, 8 days after her confirmless sighting. It wasn't unusual for her to visit the area, as she would often hike through the dunes of Gulf Islands National Seashore. The vehicle contained her bike, phone, purse, clothes, paintings, water and peanut butter. Her mother said she had often warned her about going to the beach alone. The vehicle was recovered by law enforcement and towed to the garage for forensic examination. This revealed two fingerprints, one on the door handle and one on the steering wheel. These remain unidentified. As house-to-house inquiries were completed, witnesses came forward with regard to the vehicle. One said the car had only been parked there for a couple of days, meaning it must have been somewhere else for the previous 6 days. Two other residents said they had seen a male getting out of the car on the day it was discovered. CCTV footage from the toll booths at the Bob Sykes Bridge showed Tiffany's vehicle passed through at 7:51 p.m. This is the only route from Pensacola to the island. Unfortunately, the CCTV footage is not of sufficient clarity to identify the driver. There are two residential complexes near where the vehicle was parked. This location is popular with people on their summer vacation. Her family and friends posted flyers in the area, hoping a witness may be able to identify who the person was that parked her vehicle. During the examination of Tiffany's vehicle, it was noticed that the bike had sand on the tyres. This suggested she may have ridden the bike earlier and returned it to the car before returning to the beach. There was a possibility she had gone for a swim. A friend of hers noted that the Perseid meteor shower was happening at about the time, which may have interested Tiffany. If she had gone for a swim, it was possible she had drowned. However, no body has ever been recovered from the water. Police believe it is common for bodies that have drowned to bloat and wash up on the shore. Santa Rosa Beach is 50 miles long, so her huge expanse for the police to try and locate her. A search party was organised that contained local police, the US National Park Service, Class Kids, a volunteer organisation, and search dogs. Although a few items of clothing and jewellery were discovered, none of them were identified as belonging to Tiffany. As the police investigation stalled, the family set up a Facebook page. They began sifting through tips and lines of inquiry. Initially, leads seemed hopeful. A cashier from a convenience store believed they had seen Tiffany a few days after she had disappeared. The cashier thought it was Tiffany due to the tattoos on her feet. The CCTV from the store, though, failed to provide a positive identification.
In January 2014, a waitress from Metairie, Louisiana, near to New Orleans, believed she had seen Tiffany with two other women. The waitress said one of the females resembled Tiffany. Of the two women with her was one about the same age, and the other was older and probably Latina. The older one was smartly dressed. The waitress recalls that the younger woman seemed to behave rather strangely. They both had long-sleeved shirts on, even though it was warm. Both seemed to cover their hands with their sleeves. The younger woman didn't really make eye contact with the waitress, which she thought was a little weird. It was the older woman that did the majority of the talking and ordering. The waitress, in fact, told the group that one of them resembled the missing girl, Tiffany Daniels. At this point, all three got to their feet and exited the restaurant. Unfortunately, the CCTV had been taped over, so it was not possible to verify the account. Tiffany's parents, though, believed this was her. They confirmed that Tiffany would often put her hands in her sleeves. It was something she did when she felt cold. The waitress also stated that the one she believed to be Tiffany asked if it was chicken or fish broth. Her mother recalled that a similar incident had happened previously when the family were eating out. Tiffany would always want to qualify what was in the meal, as she was pescatarian and avoided chicken-based foods. The family started to consider the fact that Tiffany may have been the victim of human trafficking. They began to link similarities between Tiffany's case and that of a woman who had been drugged and abducted from nearby Panama City. That female was taken to New Orleans and forced to work as a prostitute. It is known that traffickers usually target girls younger than Tiffany. However, it is not unusual for them to traffic girls of that age that Tiffany was. Interstate 10 passes between New Orleans and Pensacola. This is known to be one of the most used trafficking routes. Her family say that Tiffany was a very trusting person and would have potentially believed any lies the traffickers may have used to con her. In December 2015, a witness came forward to say they had observed a male in his 30s wearing red shorts with no shirt opening the tailgate of Tiffany's vehicle. This was on the very day the vehicle was discovered in the parking area. It is corroborated by two other witnesses who said they also had seen a male by the vehicle. So, it's 10 years since Tiffany vanished. The family has never given up hope that one day she will walk through the door. It is important as parents to maintain that positivity. The fact that you don't know what has happened to your child is just so distressing. Although the years pass, the heartache never fades. The desire within parents is something to be admired. They've also turned tragedy into a way of focusing their lives on the signs of trafficking and missing people. They often give talks to various agencies, explaining the signs to be aware of. Sadly, since Tiffany was last seen, there has not been any further sightings or contact. So, it's now over to you, Armchair Detectives Wanted team. This is what we know. Tiffany was in a loving relationship. Her parents did not consider that Tiffany had any issues. Her boyfriend left to attend university the day before she vanished. They both enjoyed breakfast and plans were made for her to visit him in the future. She had a job she enjoyed in the theatre as a scene designer. She had plenty of friends and was sociable and outgoing. She was residing with her father of one of her friends. He was her tenant awaiting his divorce. On the day she disappeared, August 12, 2013, he heard the front door open and close at about 5 a.m. Tiffany attended work as normal. She asked to finish early and asked for a few days leave. She clocked out of work at 4:43 p.m. That is the last confirmed sighting. She did return home after leaving work. Gary, her tenant, says he was not aware she had returned, saying he was on his phone to his girlfriend. The toll booth CCTV at Bob Sykes Bridge recorded her vehicle at 7:51 p.m. 8 days after her disappearance, her vehicle was located at Park West on Santa Rosa Island. The vehicle still contained her possessions. There are two unidentified fingerprints on the vehicle. A male was seen near to the vehicle by at least three witnesses. One describes a male with red shorts and bare-chested, in his 30s, by the tailgate. The other two witnesses saw a male getting out of the vehicle on the date it was found. A waitress at a restaurant in Louisiana said she witnessed a female that resembled Tiffany with two other females.
This is what we need to know. Has Tiffany vanished to start a new life? Has she been abducted and trafficked? Has she been the victim of a murder? Has she fallen foul of an accident and her body is still to be recovered? Has she committed suicide? Why did Tiffany finish work early that day? Why had she suddenly decided to take some time off? What were the things she told her employer she had to do? Why didn't Gary hear her when she returned home from work? He was in the house. The vehicle was captured on CCTV at 7:51 p.m. There was approximately 1 hour of daylight left. Not much time to hike, bike, ride or swim. Where was she between leaving work at 4:13 p.m. and her vehicle captured on Bob Sykes Bridge at 7:51 p.m.? How long had her vehicle been in the parking lot? Was it 8 or 2 days? How come all her possessions are still in the vehicle? Does the sand on the tyres of her bike have any meaning? Did she go for a swim? If she had gone for a swim, where are her clothes? They are in the vehicle or on the beach. She left her tent at home, so didn't intend camping, it would seem. Is the sighting by the waitress in Louisiana significant? Was it Tiffany that she recognised? Who was the younger female with her in the restaurant? Who was the older female with her that seemed to do the talking and ordering? Why did the three females leave when the witness stated she recognised Tiffany? If she was one of the three females in the restaurant, why didn't she ask for help? Who is the male in his 30s, wearing red shorts and no top, seen at the tailgate of Tiffany's vehicle? Who was the male seen getting out of the vehicle by two witnesses on the day it was discovered? Who do the unidentified fingerprints belong to? As the vehicle is still impounded by the police, is there potential for further DNA examination? If she had drowned, there is the presumption that the body would bloat, rise to the surface, and be washed ashore. Why hasn't it? What happened to Tiffany? Someone must know something. Someone must have seen something. Don't forget to go to www.armchairdetectiveswanted.com, where you will find photos and further information about the case. Please visit our Facebook page, Armchair Detectives Wanted, where you will be able to discuss your theories and views with other members. Week 24 of our scenario. One of them is guilty. You decide which one. A. Husband. B. Smith. C. Jones. Thank you for listening to Armchair Detectives Wanted. You are one of the team. Remember, don't just listen, be involved. We really would appreciate you recommending our podcast to others. We look forward to you joining us for season 2, which starts on Sunday, the 4th of August.